And there's no better fan base than Bills Mafia. What has Bills Mafia fan base been like here at American Century? Have they been giving you support throughout
this
tournament?
No, I'll tell you what. Maybe San Francisco 49ers jerseys, but I think the most memorability that I see out here is Buffalo Bills.
It's unbelievable.
Wow. We travel well.
This table is pretty sturdy, but I'd love to see, I think Bills Mafia would love to see, how sturdy is this table? Do we maybe want to try the tailgating trick
with
Bills
down.
Mafia?
That's coming
you
down.
You can bring it down?
Oh, yeah. We got to win a Super Bowl first, so.
Josh Allen, the American Century Club Championship. Saw Baker Mayfield shotgun a beer at it. Saw Joe Pavelski with an eagle putt to win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So celebrity golf.
He won. He was in first place.
Baker.
Look at this.
Baker shotguns a beer.
Steph Curry finished fifth. Where did Josh Allen finish? Out of 84, nope, more than that, 90. Out of 90 golfers, where do you think Josh Allen finished?
You're the right answer here. Isn't there some hot take where I would say, I don't want my quarterback to be too good at golf, right? Don't you do that a lot? I feel like Colin Cowherd used to say that about Tony Romo. I don't want him to be too good.
Yeah.
Romo's a good golfer. Uh-huh. Allen, out of 84?
Yeah.
And he finished 13th.
No. He finished 13th was Kevin Millar.
All right.
He finished 34th.
All right. Respectable.
Tied with Tim Brown, Hall of Fame wide receiver.
All right.
He finished above Matthew Tkachuk, Larry Fitzgerald, Dwight Freeney, finished right behind Ray Allen, Seth Curry, Jerome Bettis, Alfonso Ribeiro. Alfonso Ribeiro, he's been at that tournament every year for 35 years, hasn't he?
you tell me.
34th.
I feel I didn't know about this tournament.
He golfs a lot. Shouldn't he be doing a little better than 34th, though?
This tournament became a bigger deal once Josh Allen became part of our lives. We've got a dog in the fight, you know?
Yeah. Who was in it? I mean, there was the one year Kyle Williams was in it, I think.
Because he was a scratch golfer.
He was an amazing guy. Did he even win it one year? Or maybe he came close to winning it? No, I think Kyle Williams lost it in a year where I was like, this guy's not, the guy who won it wasn't like a real celebrity. He was like an assistant coach for like the Clippers or something. Like, this guy counts? He's in the field?
Yeah.
Anyways.
The Baker Mayfield shotgunning a beer moment. Of all the things you could do with your franchise quarterback, I'm pretty sure it was two guys in Browns jerseys that offered him like, hey, Baker, you want a shotgun a beer with us? And he went over and did it. Not Bucks jerseys, but Browns jerseys. So,
yeah,
You see, if you're Baker, you see a guy in a Browns Baker Mayfield jersey, you're probably thinking, like, wow, why not?
They probably miss him.
Yeah.
They miss him dearly.
They probably do.
It's like they finally found themselves a pretty good quarterback, and they let him go and replace him with the worst quarterback ever.
803-0550, our phone number. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. I'm back from vacation. What did I miss? Not much, maybe some. You told me that a conversation with Scott Pianowski last week, Yahoo is going to be adding the Guillotine League format.
Yahoo, automatically.
It's a win for America right there. That is a win.
Especially for commissioners like you who would have to go in every Tuesday morning, right?
Yeah.
And manually delete every player off a roster.
Yep.
And then the money part of it. Oh, the money part of it usually was pretty streamlined, right?
Pretty close, but
I ran a Guillotine League, too, where you would forget the player on IR because they wouldn't show up always right away. So having all that, being automatic now is huge. And it's also recognition that the Guillotine format is
legit. It's here to
it's
stay.
It's legit. It's many people. I have fantasy purists, friends of mine, that took years to convince them, like, dude, let's do this Guillotine League. Because they're like, no, I don't want any of this gimmicky stuff. And now they'll be like, this is the best format.
Oh, yeah. Well,
now they're like adamant. This is an amazing format. It's my favorite league.
Maybe not the best format, but whatever. It's a necessary supplement. You need it in there.
You got to have one.
You got to have one. So that's great news. Good to hear from Scott Pianowski and Yahoo Sports.
And those drafts really should be in the next month. Start scheduling
them. On vacation here, we had the Family Dynasty Rookie Draft, and it got me thinking fantasy football. It got me starting to lock in. Now my team is full, so that means I look at my team, three times a day.
Yep.
That'll soon up to 10 times a day and then 2,000 times a day.
And then it's just open content. It's always, there's a point in the year where there's a tab open with each fantasy team and it never closes.
Yep.
It'll be open from September 1st to December 30th.
It's almost that time.
And it'll never close.
Well, We're happy to be here. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you want to join us. The NFL Top 100 still rolling through. We, you know,
I think we're done with Bills not named Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins.
Somebody you think? Benford's not.
We're into the top 80.
Benford? Cook made the list. Benford's going to make it.
Benford is not going to be. I'm not saying Benford shouldn't have a case, but do you know who 81 was, who the last player ranked was?
Trent McDuffie.
And I have a hard time believing that they put Christian Benford above Trent McDuffie.
Okay.
Right? Trent McDuffie, they might be similar in how good they are, but Trent McDuffie has been doing this and been playing on this level for years now. Like, they're going to...
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that hard to believe. So, and if it's not Benford, I mean, like, maybe Terrell Bernard, but probably not, right? And I don't even know who the next name you would say is, like Spencer Brown.
I would say the next name is Spencer Brown.
Yeah.
He got an honorable mention from the NFL GMs and executives and scouts on top tackles.
That's right. James Cook's already appeared on this list.
I'll tell you one thing. I saw a name on the NFL Top 100 that made me think about a Bills player. Mm-hmm. And that's number 82, Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy goes from not ranked to 82. And what brought it about? It was a change of scenery.
Yeah.
He was a high draft pick. He was thought to be, you know, like a wide receiver, one coming out of college, out of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Denver first, and it never really gets off the ground there.
No.
Then he goes to Cleveland and puts up some pretty big numbers, and he's on the NFL Top 100. And that got me thinking about Elijah Moore, who, what's Elijah Moore's arc? It's not quite as high profile as Jeudy, but he's a second-round pick that we would have talked about when the Browns drafted him.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets.
Jets, yeah.
Yeah, the Jets drafted him. He goes from the Jets to the Browns. And when he went from the Jets to the Browns, people thought, oh, maybe there's the change of scenery. He was targeted plenty,
yeah.
And now he's here where – you know, whatever. We don't talk about it from a fantasy football standpoint where it's targets and numbers, but on just ability, Bills fans are starting to expect a lot from Moore. And I don't know that that's crazy. I saw one poll asking, like, do you think he'll have better numbers than he's ever had here? How confident are you that Moore will put up career highs in certain departments? And I think it's very possible. He's got as good a pedigree as anybody on the roster in terms of, you know, you're a second-round pick. Keon Coleman's a second-round pick. Shakir, obviously a fifth-round pick, but looks really darn good, has come into his own. Josh Palmer is, you know, Moore has as good a chance as anybody to be the second-best pass-catching option on this team. If you want to cap that ceiling at third-best, okay. But I think the expectations for Moore are much more reasonable than last year. When, you know, you'd have people trying to convince you that Chase Claypool, also second-round pick, right?
He was second-round pick.
I never thought the Claypool thing was going to get off the ground. And with Moore, it just, I think it makes a lot of sense that it really could.
Yeah. The only holdup is they didn't really pay him like they're expecting it. Which
$5 million is a lot to get off the street right now.
That's right. Like
it's not like you're 15 like Beckham gets.
And it's not even the Palmer contract, right?
That's right.
It's not
that's
Palmer
right.
3 years with guaranteed money and $11 million per year. But no, you're right. Like it is also not the Claypool contract, which is what?
$1 million?
Was that $1 million?
One to two.
Vet minimum, whatever. The point would be that he feels capable of it. That maybe they're hoping for it as a bonus. And that, like, he was just sitting out there, and the market wasn't really all that strong. So, all right, let's give this a shot, and it's not going to cost a ton of money. But is he capable of it? Because for that, I mean, there's more for him on tape and in the numbers that I think shows that he could be a really good receiver still than there was with Claypool, than there was with MVS last year. And I don't want to overreact to it, but he did look really, really fast in that one Twitter video that he put out about a week ago.
Yeah.
That's not even training camp videos. That is workouts before training camp videos that I don't want to overreact to too much. But, I mean, don't you see in that video, like, what makes him different than those other guys, which is his ability to cut like that? And, isn't that part of what makes him a good route runner and his ability to separate and get open? Because that's the thing that, like, Claypool – wasn't doing.
No.
Claypool looked like a specimen. Like, he is huge and fast, and he is in great shape, and, you know, he looks like that guy's got to be good at football. But he didn't really get open. Even when he put up some big numbers in Pittsburgh, it wasn't really him getting open all that much. Whereas Elijah Moore, that separation ability, I think if you have that ability, you're a certain level of good in the NFL. You're not going to crash and burn. And I feel like Moore, like, that's his skill set. He's going to separate from guys. And maybe that means that he'll only be pretty good, but I don't know. I like the skill set a lot.
Well, pretty good is useful. I mean, this team, you know, could use some pretty good receivers, and I think they might have a couple of avenues to get there. Like Moore, you might also line up that this is the next Curtis Samuel hope. Like, Samuel might be the guy that we forget about the most in this group because Palmer, Coleman. I mean, Palmer's on the outside, and he's supposed to be their man beater, and Shakir and Kincaid. Like, you've got all these pieces, and Samuel's the one where, I mean, he's got a healthy contract, but I don't know. I don't know how they're going to use him. Allen came to his defense at the end of the season or offseason saying, like, you know, turf toe, never got on the right foot. And that's another thing that has to happen here. Is can Allen get better chemistry with some of these guys? Kincaid's the top answer for this. In talking with Joe Marino of Locked On Bills, he points out that of all the tight ends in football, when they're on the field, the most targeted tight end was Dalton Kincaid. Like, his targets per route run for tight ends was at the top.
Yeah.
And here we are thinking it's not really working so far. So could that just be chemistry, time in the lab, if I could use that with finger quotes, that if those two get on the same page and start to really understand each other, how they see the game the same way, that, you know, Kincaid can blossom the way people think he's going to. But
yeah,
there's a lot of different avenues to finding this offense right where it was last year near the top of the league. And I guess the question is, you know, which arrangement of these players will do it the best? Will it be more jumping over Curtis Samuel, which I think is very possible? Will it be more commanding more targets than, you know, who's next up on the projected target chart? Could he out-target Coleman? I don't know. I don't think so.
I think you would hope,
because Coleman's going to be on the field an awful lot.
You would hope that he, wouldn't you hope he doesn't? Wouldn't it be the best? Does it matter? I mean, one guy is younger and he plays a different type of role for their offense. Like, that maybe is part of it. It's not only what they've invested in Coleman, but it also is what role he plays, what they want him to play. They want him to be the X receiver that is on the field all the time, that is blocking, that is going to turn to this well-rounded player. Shouldn't I want Coleman to be the one that really jumps forward just because of even the draft status? Like, that's why I kind of like Elijah Moore being here and Palmer and the rest of them, because if Coleman doesn't take a step forward, I feel like they're still in good shape. I feel like they're in pretty darn good shape. But if I can, in a perfect world, pick one of them that's going to take that big step forward, I think I would want to take that guy. And it's not just what they picked. Again, it's part of, they're going to have him on the field all the time. And that was Mac Collins. Like, do I want my ex receiver being a guy like that? Who is, you know, like, he was a great character and he was okay out there on the field. But the guy that played the most snaps for me on the field was not my most dangerous wide receiver. And I think I'd like to get back to a place where those guys aren't just running empty calorie routes, you know, clear out routes down the field and blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want that player to be somebody that you have to worry about. And like, Coleman's not coming off the field.
I think he's on the field a lot.
If he doesn't, even if he doesn't take a step forward as a separator and a route runner, and even if he doesn't get better with the contested catch, which he had some bad numbers on last year, if all of that doesn't get better, he's still on the field, right? Because who else plays that role? Who else is blocking? Who else is playing the X? He's on the field.
Yeah. After Palmer and Coleman out there, it's...
Whereas if Elijah Moore doesn't play well, he's not out there.
No, you've got options.
So, and even Kincaid. Kincaid last year, as Joe pointed out, Joe Marino, led the league in targets per route run. He only ran a route on 62% of their pass plays. So, I mean, that could be injury too for him, right? But even Kincaid, like, if it's not going well with Kincaid, I got Dawson Knox, and I play more 11 personnel, right? If Coleman doesn't, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm putting Tyrell Shavers out there on the field. Who's playing that spot if Coleman's not doing it?
803-0550. Have a Twitter poll up about the Bills offseason. We are, of course, one day away from rookies reporting, and then we get on to regular training camp to start Wednesday next week. That's when the first practice will be.
By the way, you mentioned Jerry Jeudy at the end of last season. Yeah. This is where I like the comparison. I don't think Elijah Moore has quite this ceiling, where from week 9 on last year in Cleveland, week 9 on, Jerry Jeudy had 95 targets in the Browns offense.
That's a lot.
There were three in the league that outpaced him. I think you could get the three. No, one of them might be tough. Chase, Adams, and Neighbors. Adams getting 99 surprised me, because those were all with the Jets.
Yeah.
But I guess they force-fed him.
Have a Twitter poll up about the Bills' offseason. Do you think the Bills had a good offseason? Hell yeah, probably, sure, or no. We're keeping the vibes, however you want to answer that, you can. Leading the way is 42%, probably. And that's where I voted. Probably.
And are more people saying hell yeah than no?
Yes.
Okay.
No is at 5%. I feel like, what would a bad offseason look like? Losing provably good players and not replacing them? Which, I mean, this offseason was about extending a lot of their good players. So,
right.
What would a bad offseason even look like? I think it looks like that. It looks like, boy, you don't get Rousseau extended. You don't get Benford extended. It sounds like both are unhappy and want to leave. Yeah, I can't even... It's hard to really picture what a bad offseason looks like, but it looks like more going out than coming in, and that definitely did not happen.
Would fans have said that about last offseason? Because that's kind of what happened last year, wasn't it?
That was an exodus of leadership to a degree, but that was...
It was understood, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because of your cap situation and where a lot of those guys were in their careers. I have a hard time believing there is really a realistic offseason they could have where fans would be like, no, that was a bad offseason.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what, as you just mentioned, like what would it look like? I don't know.
Let me bring up a point here. Andrew tweets in moments ago.
They traded with the Chiefs last year for their first round. That's right. I don't know how many people would have said it was a bad offseason.
Andrew tweets in, they do have multiple suspended players, and an injury-prone guy had an injury. That's fair.
Right, your defensive line right now, which is what they poured in on, one guy's hurt, two guys are suspended, and the other might hold out. Second-round rookie.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but it is.
He's probably not going to.
It's July 14th.
That's the thing. I'm not worried about any of them for January right now.
No.
So how worried am I really?
It's going to be one of the challenging things about camp and about this team is everything evaluated through the lens of January. You know, Coleman could be at camp. I'm thinking about last year, Coleman at camp. What did he look like? He had some pretty darn impressive catches. You see a lot of the highlights of him going up above the rim, playing basketball, and, you know, just kind of getting those highlight reel catches. And I think now going into this year, it'll be a little bit of, looks great, show it to me, and, you know, show it to me consistently on the field in important moments. Not to say he wasn't doing that. It's just... You know, not that camp lies to us, because I don't think we've got too many players that have been camp stars that didn't show out a little bit better. It's just kind of like, yeah, everything looks good as long as everybody stays healthy and you get to January.
Yeah. The one thing I'm glad that happened to me last week was I really bought in fully on the importance of the one seed last week.
Yeah.
Just by comparing the paths to the Super Bowl that the Bills have had versus what the one seed has had in the last 5 years and how drastically different they are. Not even just because you only play two teams versus three, but the Bills have had their path to the Super Bowl every year for 5 years has featured two of the three, Baltimore, Kansas City, and Cincinnati, every year. And with an extra game at the beginning of it. The one seed... Every year has only had to play one of those teams, and 3 years in a row has played the winner of the AFC South. So, and that's the thing the Bills haven't had, right? That is, look at last year. Kansas City has to beat Houston and Buffalo. That's it. You win those two games and you're in. The Bills have to go Denver, Baltimore, Kansas City. That's way harder. That is way, way harder. And I think that's really going to have me, for camp next week and for, you know, the beginning of the season, like that'll have me dialed. Is You got let's see you finally get that easiest path where you don't have to play the wild card round. You get the AFC South winner or Pittsburgh in the second round, and then you just got to beat one of them. Maybe you get lucky, you don't have to play Kansas City. You just have to play Baltimore. You just have to play Cincinnati, or maybe you just have to beat the Chiefs. But this having to beat two of the three every year is part of what I think has made it a lot harder and why they haven't made it yet.
Home Run Derby tonight on ESPN.
In Atlanta.
Here's your format if you care. Three rounds. Eight players have 3 minutes or 40 pitches.
3 minutes or 40 pitches?
Uh-huh, whichever comes first. There's also a bonus period for each player that lasts until they record three outs.
See, this is where this is where it stops for me.
If a player hits a home run of at least 425 feet within the bonus period, the period is extended until the player records a fourth out.
I mean, what?
So
are we measuring going, the 425 feet? Going, we have an extra wall or something?
You're going 40 pitches or 3 minutes.
Okay.
Boom, there's your number.
Okay.
Now begins the period of three outs. Okay?
Okay.
If you hit a home run of at least 425 feet in the bonus period, the period is extended, you add an additional fourth out.
This is madness.
In the semifinals.
This is madness.
The format shifts to a knockout style. 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3, 2 minutes or 27 pitches in the semifinals and finals.
27 pitches.
Ties in the semifinals or finals are broken by a 60-second swing-off with no additional time added. If a tie remains after the swing-off, batters engage in hand-to-hand combat. No, I'm kidding. successive three-swing swing-offs.
I would take that right now.
I had you for a second, didn't I? The winners of the final.
For half a second, it was yeah.
2 minutes, 27 pitches in the final. Each batter's entitled to 1 45-second timeout in each of the three regulation periods.
I mean.
Okay. The real question is, will there be a rules analyst on hand to tell us if a ball
went? I'm going to need four of them. I'm going to need four of them to explain all of this to me.
That's tonight. Catch the fever that is the home run.
Gina,
derby.
You know, that ball landed on the line for 425 feet, and the ball just barely peaked past the line, so this is why he gets the four. Just
honest question.
Crazy.
I don't remember what the rules were when I was 12 and watching guys hit home runs. I just want to watch guys hit home runs. You know, just smash the ball out of the park.
Just put a 60-second clock on it, and whoever hits the most home, I feel like 5 minutes.
I think it used to be 5 minutes.
Maybe, 5 minutes?
Maybe 4 minutes, whatever.
You get 5 minutes, you hit as many home runs as you want.
Actually,
bang, there it is. Home run derby. It'd be great.
I feel like it used to just be 10 outs. 10 outs. Swing it whatever you want, 10 outs. Not about pitches, but outs.
You're right. Okay, so just randomly I picked 2005. So in 2005, each contestant receives 10 outs. Top four home run hitters of the round advance to the next round. That's round one. That's it. No clock. You get 10 outs. Round two, each bat, that's the same thing. Every round is you get 10 outs. Simple, clean. That's it. You know exactly how much time everyone's got, or not time, but how far away everybody is from being, you know, done.
Yep.
Versus, oh, wait, he's got 6 seconds left. But if this one goes this far, then he's got another 30 seconds, and I got clock operators, and this seems way too complicated.
Yeah, it's elaborate. 803-0550, that's tonight, the Home Run Derby. Enjoy it. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.